This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 846 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Heavy Israeli shelling and tank fire remain constant across Gaza. Sources with Al Jazeera reported that Israeli forces targeted areas east of Khan Yunis on Wednesday, and warplanes bombed empty homes east of the city of Deir el-Balah in areas controlled and occupied by the Israeli military. At least two explosions took place in the north of Gaza as the Israeli army carried out demolitions in Jabalia and shelled neighborhoods east of Gaza City. Journalist Mahmoud Abu Salama recorded footage of Israeli gunfire on Jabalia camp on Sunday. He captioned this video, quote, "Despite talk of ceasefire in Gaza, this is the daily life of the residents of Jabalia camp in northern Gaza." Israeli attacks killed three Palestinians and injured three others on Tuesday in Gaza City, according to the Anadolu news agency. Among those killed was a 17-year-old boy. Israeli soldiers shot and killed a Palestinian in Jabalia on Monday, and a man was wounded by Israeli fire east of Gaza City that same day, as the Israeli army continued extensive bulldozing operations in the Al-Sanafur area and around the Al-Barch cemetery. These operations included the desecration of graves under the pretext of searching for the body of the last remaining Israeli prisoner of war in the Gaza Strip, which was returned on Monday. The Israeli army announced a large-scale search operation inside the Gaza Strip for the missing soldier and began desecrating the cemetery in eastern Gaza City, exhuming graves and destroying remains. Reporter Mahmoud Ghazi recorded footage in the aftermath of the destruction of the cemetery on Tuesday. Local sources told the Wafa news agency that the area and its surroundings were subjected to heavy artillery shelling and intense gunfire from military vehicles, as well as sniper fire and quadcopter drones, resulting in fatalities and dozens of injuries. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said it had reviewed documented reports indicating that the Israeli army dug up nearly 200 graves in the cemetery. Over the past 2 years, the human rights group says, quote, "Israel has systematically destroyed cemeteries in the Gaza Strip, dug up and vandalized graves, tampered with bodies, and transferred dozens of remains." The Israeli army has destroyed 21 out of 60 cemeteries in the Gaza Strip over the past 2 years and has systematically vandalized cemeteries and exhumed graves in all areas where it conducted ground incursions, Euromed added. Quote, "These actions included bulldozing graves, extracting remains, and crushing them with military machinery, repeatedly causing the mixing, loss, and disappearance of remains, as well as damage to neighboring graves." At least two infants have died due to hypothermia this week as Israel's blockade on proper shelters and caravans remains in place. On Saturday, a three-month-old infant, Ali Abu Zor, died from extreme cold and was taken to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, according to the health ministry in Gaza. The ministry reported on Tuesday, January 27th, that another baby, a 12-day-old newborn named Haytham Abu Qas, also died at Al-Rantisi Hospital from hypothermia, bringing the total number of child deaths from the cold this winter season to at least 11. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians this week in separate attacks. Qusay Maher Ismail Halaika, 28, was shot and killed near a checkpoint in Bethlehem. Wafa news agency said that Israeli soldiers shot him and then left him to bleed on the ground. That killing followed the execution of a 20-year-old Palestinian, Mohammed Rajeh Nasrallah, on Tuesday by Israeli forces during a military raid south of Al-Khalil. Nasrallah was shot in the abdomen, according to the health ministry. During the raid, another youth was shot and injured with live ammunition. Israeli forces shot and wounded a Palestinian teenager also on Tuesday in the Qalandia refugee camp and the adjacent town of Kufr Aqab, north of occupied Jerusalem. Wafa news agency said that the teenager was injured during the second consecutive day of Israeli aggressions inside the refugee camp and Kufr Aqab, including the carrying out of demolitions of dozens of buildings, facilities, and infrastructure under the pretext of security claims and lacking Israeli-issued permits. Approximately 40 separate structures have been demolished in the area since the raid began, as heavy military vehicles and bulldozers are working to impose what the Jerusalem governorate calls a buffer zone alongside Israel's wall in the West Bank. Also in East Jerusalem, Israeli police and intelligence forces raided and shut down a screening of the feature film Palestine 36 at the Yabus Cultural Center on January 22nd. The Yabus Center stated that a unit from the intelligence services stormed the venue during the screening and ordered organizers to stop the viewing without presenting a judicial warrant. They also arrested the projectionist. Palestine 36, directed by Anne-Marie Jasser and shortlisted for an Academy Award, is about the 1936 to 1939 Arab revolt against British colonial rule in Palestine and portrays the roots of the Palestinian liberation struggle. The Israelis said that the Yabus Center was screening a film, quote, promoting work by a terrorist organization. The center described the move as, quote, a direct assault on freedom of expression and cultural activity in the city, adding that it reflects escalating restrictions imposed by Israeli authorities on Palestinian cultural life in Jerusalem in violation of international laws and conventions. Meanwhile, Israeli settler violence continues to expand across the West Bank with the support and participation of Israeli army forces. The United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights stated this week that, quote, state-backed settler violence has become a key driver of forced displacement, chipping away at Palestinian presence in strategic locations. Such settler-driven displacement, particularly in Bedouin and herding communities, usually follows the same pattern. An illegal outpost is erected near or inside a herding community. Settlers restrict Palestinians' access to water and grazing space. Settlers repeatedly attack communities, destroy property, infrastructure, and livestock, and injure or kill residents, the UN office said. On January 27th, approximately 300 Israeli Jewish settlers attacked areas in Masafer Yatta, south of Al-Khalil, and injured Palestinians, torched homes and property, stole livestock, and blocked ambulances that arrived to evacuate the injured, the UN said. Wafa news agency reported that one of the injured, Samir Hamamda, said he was beaten by settlers when a mob descended on his house, pelting it with stones and pepper spraying inside, wounding his wife and children. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said it treated two patients in the village of Al-Fakit, including a young man with a head injury and a girl with a broken hand. Other residents in the Masafer Yatta area were also injured, including women and children, when the settlers smashed the windows of vehicles and homes. In Khirbet al-Halawa, several Palestinians were hurt by stones thrown by the settlers, who also stole 150 sheep from the area, Wafa reported. Mohammed Hureini, a resident of Masafer Yatta and the co-founder of the Youth of Samud project, filmed the attack on Tuesday. He said, quote, over the past 5 hours, settler militias carried out a brutal pogrom against my people in my village, Masafer Yatta. The violent settlers stormed homes, burned properties, destroyed vehicles, and stole livestock. Settlers did not stop there. Their violence brought numerous injuries among civilians. All of this happened in full view of the Israeli army and police, who stood by and did nothing. Not a single settler was arrested. On the contrary, Israeli settlers assaulted two Palestinian women and the soldiers arrested them, the women. It is organized terror carried out and enabled by the military with total impunity.
Settlers set up fires in front of the houses of the Palestinians. On the other side, you can see settlers, soldiers, watching the pogrom that was happening here. We are trying now to turn off the fire.
On January 25th, Israeli settlers assaulted and injured Palestinian herders in the Rajum Ali area in the South Hebron Hills and ran over a 13-year-old Palestinian boy with a tractor, fracturing his leg. Israeli security forces were present during the attack but fired tear gas and stun grenades toward the Palestinian residents, the United Nations said. On Monday, January 26th, following repeated attacks and threats by Israeli settlers, the remaining 100 residents of the Ras Ain al-Auja Bedouin community near Jericho were forced to leave the area, bringing the number of people displaced from that community this month to about 600, according to the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. The office said that, quote, settlers had damaged or blocked herders' access to grazing areas around the community and prevented them from using the nearby spring, severely undermining their livelihoods. This comes on top of livestock theft and frequent attacks resulting in injuries and property damage. Since the beginning of January, the UN Human Rights Office, OCHA, has recorded the displacement of 688 Palestinians from eight communities due to settler attacks, which is over 40% the number of displaced people in that category for the whole of 2025. It also comes on top of the displacement of another 130 Palestinians this month due to demolitions. OCHA is carrying out assessments and working with humanitarian partners to ensure people receive the support they need, OCHA said. Other settler attacks were recorded this past week in Jerusalem, the central and northern West Bank, the Jordan Valley, and the South Hebron Hills. The attacks resulted in extensive property damage, arson attacks, injuries, and forcible displacement of Palestinian families, primarily affecting Bedouin and herding households, according to the UN. We've published many features in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Trapped Between Two Different Worlds by Ahmed Abu Shawish, writing from Gaza. It's 9 p.m. Gaza time, Abu Shawish writes. Rain is pounding against the broken, nylon-covered windows of my family's home in Nuseirat, central Gaza, and the wind pushes through every small crack. I'm sitting at my desk, holding a cup of coffee, and thinking about my father. We had a routine before 2023 of late-night conversation, coffee, and long walks. But tonight there will be no long walk, and our conversation is happening through a WhatsApp video call. When he calls, I can hear the rain twice, once from outside my window and once through his phone speakers, from thousands of kilometers away in Italy. The same storm falling on two different worlds. My father, Dr. Mohammed Abu Shawish, was evacuated from Gaza to Italy in September 2025, leaving behind the six of us, including my mother and my four siblings. Tonight, through a screen, we try to recreate the comfort of our walks and late-night talks, but nothing feels the same. His face is lit by the warm, stable light of an apartment in Europe, mine by the dim yellow of a battery-powered lamp. My father and I share the same quiet nature. We don't complain easily, and we don't talk about our fears much. In September 2023, he was awarded a scholarship to continue his postdoctoral studies at the University of Milano Bicocca, with a departure date of October that year. He postponed his studies several times, despite the multiple calls from the Italian embassy urging him to evacuate. He chose to remain with us through those early months of devastation and displacement. He believed that the genocide would soon come to an end and that we would all be able to go to Italy. However, that hope slowly faded over time. After more than 700 days, we reached the painful conviction that the suffering might last indefinitely. My father called the embassy in September 2025, hoping that it might evacuate all of us. But later that month, on a Friday morning, an official at the embassy called back with a message, "You'll be evacuated on Monday." Before he could even ask about his family, the official added, "But unfortunately, alone." My father asked on the video call if I had started studying Italian. It wasn't the first time he had mentioned it. Ever since he reached Milan, he has encouraged me to learn the language, repeating, "You have to prepare yourself to come here." But I have not started to learn Italian. I can't quite believe I will ever go there. I nod and say, "Inshallah." This time, though, I laughed and told him that I barely have time for that. My days are consumed by my engineering courses at the Islamic University of Gaza, interrupted constantly by errands and lines to buy food and retrieve water. He stayed silent for a moment, then asked, "What are you waiting for?" "Maybe because I don't see the point," I said. "Why should I waste time preparing for a future that might never arrive?" He said I needed to get rid of these pessimistic thoughts. "You should learn Italian because it's the key to our reunification. Nothing else matters more." I didn't respond because I wasn't sure what the honest answer was. Instead, I stared at the blurry pixels of his face. I nodded and said, "Inshallah," even though we both knew it was less a promise and more a way to keep the door from closing completely. Those are excerpts from Trapped Between Two Different Worlds by Ahmad Abushawish, an engineering student, journalist, and activist based in Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. In Gaza, our recent guest, Maha Husseini, a researcher with Euromed Human Rights Monitor, posted this photo on Wednesday of two young people painting a mural on a wall in Gaza City. Here's what Maha writes. Quote, "The University Square is one of Gaza City's most familiar landmarks. It holds the buildings of Gaza's two oldest universities, Al-Azhar University and the Islamic University, places that once pulsed with life. For years, this square was one of the city's busiest roads, shaped by the countless taxis and the daily footsteps of students arriving from every corner of the strip, carrying notebooks and doing last-minute revision for exams as they crossed the street. During the genocide in Gaza, this place was nearly destroyed. Some university buildings were bombed, while others were seized and converted into military bases by Israeli occupation forces. Roads were devastated, infrastructure damaged, and the square that once gathered knowledge was reduced to rubble. I loved this street. I knew it by heart. Here, I earned both my bachelor's and master's degrees. I remember its rain-soaked pavements, how the light reflected on the asphalt, how the city felt alive beneath my feet. This street also housed the media office where I found myself involuntarily, becoming a journalist during Israel's 51-day offensive on Gaza in 2014, documenting a war while still learning how to name the world. I witnessed life and death here. I learned, I grew up, and I ran from airstrikes along the same road again and again. As fate would have it, my temporary office during the ongoing genocide now stands on this street. Every morning, I walk past my wounded university. I watch students crossing the devastated roads to reach their lectures, entering the same classrooms where I once studied languages, learning how to speak, how to testify, how to carry our story beyond these walls. Earlier this week, I passed by and saw a young woman and a young man painting a damaged wall of the university. They layered fresh colors over cracks and scorch marks, not to erase what happened, but to refuse its final word. In a place where the occupation tried to silence learning, these young people chose color once again. On a street devastated to crush life, students still arrive every morning. But most of all, I cherish this morning's painting because amid the ruins of a square that once taught me how to speak, life continues to insist on being heard. That's Maha Husseini writing from Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.